From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And it's time for our Friday Reporter Roundtable, where we talk about what's been making news across the 21st state. Today, the Metro East region and Champaign-Urbana. We're joined now by Will Bauer, Metro East reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. Will, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Good to be here. Thanks, Brian.
And also joining us is Emily Hayes, education reporter and my colleague at our home station, Illinois Public Media. Emily, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Emily, I actually want to begin with you. The University of Illinois community has been mourning the death of a student. Let's just begin by talking about who was he in life?
He was a happy-go-lucky kid, according to his parents. His name was Akul Dawan. He is from California. He loved Legos from a young age. He got interested in computer science, and that's why he wanted to come to the University of Illinois. An example of the kind of projects he was interested in, he was building an app in high school to connect people during the pandemic who didn't have relatives with volunteers.
And I mean, say more about what happened to him then.
Yeah. So he was found dead on January 20th, which was a Saturday. It was the week of extreme cold. The coroner found signs of hypothermia on him, but they don't know the cause of death yet. They're waiting for the final autopsy results. The friend called the police early Saturday morning, you know, about an hour after they'd lost contact with him, said they were worried about him in the cold, but the police didn't find him. An unrelated university employee did the next morning, about 9 hours later. So the parents are really, really distraught, obviously. They blame the police for not finding him when he wasn't that far from his reported location. The police did provide an update on Wednesday about their timeline. They did, you know, look at all the places where he would have been at that time. They drove slowly past, you know, they should have really been able to see him, it seems like, but and so they looked for him for about half an hour, it looks like, and then, you know, some other places too, called hospitals, that sort of thing. They also say that the friend gave them incorrect info about, you know, he was at the Canopy Club, not at a residence hall that is really nearby. And it seems like he had been having alcohol with friends and had some options for rideshares and turned them down. But police, you know, parents still say the police should have found him and that it's a tragedy that should have been prevented.
Yeah, well, all these deaths are tragedies. What are there any sort of policy implications to this or anything the university is looking at systemically? Or is it too early to say?
So far, I haven't heard anything like that. You know, the parents for sure would like changes with the police. You know, they just feel that he should have been found and that this is preventable and they'd like this to never happen to anyone.
All right, well, we will continue to watch that story as it develops. Emily, I want to stick with you and turn now to a more policy-oriented story, mm-hmm. and that is health officials across Champaign County are looking for input on how to address lack of nursing home beds. How much is the county short, and how are they hoping to respond?
Yeah, so they are short about 300 skilled nursing home beds, according to the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. That's apparently well below the average for the state, according to the Advocates for Aging Care. The state has an excess of 17%, and the county has a deficit of 40%. This was all reported by Farrah Anderson, a student at University of Illinois who works with us. So they have these two groups, the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District and Advocates for Aging Care, have launched a survey to hear about the needs in the community. They plan to work with a consultant about how to fix it. They say that the result of this lack of skilled nursing home beds, which means, you know, you can get nursing care equivalent to a hospital. Local people have to stay in a hospital longer or they have to go to other communities and states to get that care. Nationally, there's a shortage too, and people attribute that to a switch from nonprofit running these facilities to for-profit corporations running them. Locally, one particular operator closed three of their skilled nursing home facilities. This was an Illinois-based person, and we lost 463 beds.
Wow, 463 beds.
Yeah, just for the county. Is that crazy? Yeah.
That seems like a lot. Yes, it does. All right, Emily, thank you for sharing that story. Will, I want to welcome you again and talk about something else. This is a major government facility. It kind of flies under the radar, I think, of a lot of people in the St. Louis metropolitan area, but it's the National Veterans Records Center. And they had a huge backlog during the pandemic. What is the story there?
Yeah, so basically anytime a vet needs to get something from the VA or maybe a nonprofit that would provide a service to the vet, they may need a record, and they may need to prove that they're disabled or they're eligible for this type of medical care, or they served in this branch of the military from this year to this year. And a lot of people don't have that info handy. So an agency of the National Archives keeps all these records, and the Archives is based in D.C., but the National Personal Records Center, this facility that keeps these records, just so happens to be in St. Louis County. And records before 2000 are largely analog. And so when the pandemic had hit, the Records Center had to send some people home and work with a much smaller crew. But the demand didn't stop. The Records Center, you know, gets 4,000 to 5,000 requests coming in every day from all over the country. So remote work and analog records don't really work together, right? You can't, if you're at home, you can't physically go grab the record, scan it, and deliver it to the right place. That doesn't really work. And it really slowed down this process that's pretty important to vets trying to get medical care, whatever they may need. And the center got a backlog of 600,000 requests by March of 2022, and that's a figure they'd never seen before. And veterans advocates said that meant former military members were waiting 12 to 18 months for their records, and of course, they're also waiting for the services that they need. And so the solution to this kind of came in a number of different ways. In March 2022, at the peak of the backlog, people were coming back into the office, so that really helped. The director of the Records Center had said that staff here in the St. Louis area worked a lot of weekends and overtime to catch up. They were also able to work with the VA to digitize some of those old analog records and figure out a way for employees working remotely to securely access these records to start chipping away at the backlog. And so the news, of course, is just that the backlog is getting cleared, right? Last week, the center director said that they were well below 600 or well below 100,000. So from 600,000 to 100,000. He joked, though, that they aren't quite out of work just yet.
Yeah, still tens of thousands of records every week that get called on. I was fascinated by this. Apparently, these records go as far back as the Spanish-American War. I can't imagine, unless maybe people are doing genealogical research for their, you know, grandparents or great-grandparents then. But it's really a century's worth of military records there.
Yep, and you got it exactly right. It would be to the Spanish records, 1890s, and genealogical or family research, things like that.
All right. Well, another major institution in your region and the Metro East region is the Granite City Works. This is a steel plant. We've talked about this on the show a number of times. It's become, been used as a political football over the years. President Trump rallied there. Can you remind us of the backstory and of that? And then just what is the latest development, or what are we waiting on to happen there?
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that I feel like you and I talk about every single time I join the show. I guess to catch people up, so U.S. Steel is a massive company of steel producers all across the country. They're headquartered in Pittsburgh, Steel City, right? And they have some big mills in the Midwest. The one in Gary, Indiana, near Chicago is a really, really big one. This one in Granite City, which is a suburb of St. Louis on the Illinois side of the river here, isn't nearly that big, but it's kind of seen as the lifeblood of Granite City, which is why we pay so much attention to it. And there's been plenty of happenings there with people getting laid off, coming back to work, et cetera, et cetera. And this latest news came when the Japanese company Nippon bought U.S. Steel, which is the parent company of Granite City Works. And that's a massive deal worth $15 billion. But the worry here locally is what that sale to the Japanese company means for Granite City Works. And a lot of communities with U.S. Steel facilities are asking that same question. But the short answer, unfortunately for them, is that no one really knows. Nippon has said that they will honor all agreements with unions, but locals here in Granite City will largely be stuck waiting. And the reason is the sale hasn't even closed. Spokespeople for both companies expect the deal to be finalized in the second or third quarter of this year. So that could be as early as April or as late as September. So unfortunately for the people here, if they're worried about their jobs, their livelihood, or the economic health of their city, they kind of just have to play the waiting game.
Well, that is something we will also continue, and I suspect you and I will talk about this again someday. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We begin, as we do every Friday, with our local news roundup, focusing on different parts of the state. Today, the Metro East region. We're talking with Will Bauer, who covers that area for St. Louis Public Radio, and Emily Hayes with Illinois Public Media, where she is an education reporter. And so, Emily, let me ask you about an education-related story. There was a 2020 study of U.S. Census data that found 1 in 10 college students are food insecure. And Illinois lawmakers are trying to address that issue. What's happening there?
So there's a new momentum nationally and in Illinois to end college student hunger. Like you said, it's a pretty significant number, even though, you know, non-students of the same age, there's a higher percentage of hunger. But it's still a big problem. And a bill passed last year in Illinois that incentivizes universities to create hunger-free campuses. This year, the lawmakers are trying to get money to back that incentive. So I spoke with someone at the University of Illinois Chicago who was a sophomore experiencing hunger. Hanaya Thomas set up a coalition her sophomore year to advocate for the needs of Black students, and she was really busy. She had to buy a meal plan, but she often missed her dining hall hours. She didn't have a lot of extra money to buy meals out, so she would just buy a candy bar and a soda at the end of the day, and that was all that she had. And she found herself really drained, sleeping all weekend, and realized that something was wrong. And she's actually talked to other friends who they've realized that a lot of students have experienced this as well, especially their sophomore year. So there's a happy ending to her story in that she is now on a national scholarship from the Obama Foundation. She can afford to live in a place that has a kitchen, also get a meal plan and groceries. And she's balanced her schedule as well. So because she's part of this coalition, she's now advocating for other students. A lot of students have asked for kind of 24/7 or late night access to healthy food. So she's thinking about vending machines that sell salads in dorms or, you know, study sessions with meals. Locally, in Champaign-Urbana, the representative who has been spearheading this is Carol Ammons. And she says she's trying to fund creative solutions like these, and she's looking for that in this upcoming budget cycle.
I gotta say, I was in no way food insecure when I was in college. I'm very fortunate to be able to say that, but I gotta say, would I have chosen the salad in the vending machine? I'm not so sure.
But in the contrast, if you're only having candy bars and soda,
fair enough.
You get tired of that.
Yeah. If you say so. Emily, speaking of policy changes, and we only have a few minutes left in our time together, I do want to ask you briefly about higher education in Illinois prisons. There's some new data available now. What's the story there?
Yeah, basically, we haven't had any transparency into higher education in prisons. This is the first time because of a bill, again, passed by Carol Ammons, the bill will allow us to see who is taking classes, how many students, what the demographics are, where they're taking these courses, what the student complaints are about the courses, and wait lists, because there are significant wait lists according to anecdotes, but we don't know the proper number.
And Will Bauer, last question to you, just 2 minutes left. I understand there's a new effort to map the Cahokia Mounds. This is a global heritage site that exists here in Illinois. What's that about?
Yeah, and maybe just a little more background quickly. In case people aren't aware, Cahokia Mounds is believed to be one of the largest Native American civilizations in North America. That's not in Mexico or Central America. Located just across the Mississippi River from St. Louis, kind of near East St. Louis and another suburb, Collinsville. So anyway, of course, because of its historic nature, there's been tons of research. And this latest mapping effort comes from St. Louis University, a consortium of other local universities, and the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. If you're not aware, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, or NGA, as it's called, because that's a mouthful, is a division of the Department of Defense. And you may wonder, why in the world is the DOD interested in Cahokia Mountains? And that's a great question. And the reason is that these researchers want to make the authoritative map for future college students or whomever else can use it for their continued research. And there's parts of Cahokia Mountains that would be really hard and take a long time for surveyors to reach. There's thick forests, swampy areas. So they're using drones and a technology called LIDAR, which is light detection and ranging. And what NGA brings to this project is they're really, really good about being super accurate with these drones and LIDAR. So if you want to make the authoritative map of a very famous, well-studied archaeological site, you can call NGA. And the hope is that this new map can, you know, set the record straight. Or maybe they can find something new. But to all better understand this very influential site in Native American history.
Fascinating. Will Bauer is a Metro East reporter at KWMU, St. Louis Public Radio. Emily Hayes covers education for Illinois Public Media. Will and Emily, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us this Friday.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. We are going to be turning to politics. We'll be talking about an effort, a failed effort, to remove President Donald Trump from the primary election ballot here in Illinois, and we'll be getting the latest from our woman in Washington. That's all coming up after the break here on The 21st Show. Please stay with us.